Breakfast puppies?
This podcast contains adult language and content and is meant for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars. But mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
So, NPC, what are you socially distancing drinking right now?
Okay, I am drinking something that comes with a story that I must tell. So this is a Widmer's Brothers Brewing Company beverage. And a week or so ago, one of my coworkers had their last week. And on that final meeting day that we had, this kind of voice meeting to send them on their way, video chat, he was drinking this beverage that he referred to as one of the most awful things he had ever drank.
Ooh, so like cranberry bad?
You might think so, Xander. And I'll tell you why. He bought a six pack of it, drank half of one, and decided he didn't want the rest. And I said, man, I do this podcast and we talk about beverages, good and bad, and I would love to take those off your hands. He said, yeah, cool. I'll set them up in my backyard. You can come pick them up. So okay. We did this kind of stealth mission where we drove up and I crept into his backyard while he wasn't home and stole beer from his backyard. At least probably what it looked like to his neighbors.
Yeah.
And I drank some, and I am here to tell you that this is Widmer Brothers Supervisen, and it is indeed one of the worst things I've ever had. Let me describe what's in this. It has goji berry, acai berry, golden berry, blueberry, black carrot, ginseng, and wheat.
Did you say bleach?
Yeah, sure. With a blend of real berries, this purple and delicious, no, Hefeweizen rewards your taste buds with balanced fruit taste and a super, and that's super with an umlaut, a super refreshing finish. This is god awful, and I have to finish.
When you buy that, does it come with a pair of skinny jeans and a fixie bike?
I think it comes with yoga pants. I think it comes with a full outfit from Prana.
Wow,
and a Subaru Outback.
Oh my god.
I'm really surprised that they didn't just jump straight to kombucha with this, because this is just god awful. But I'm finishing it. It's got to be good in the end, you know.
Jacob, what are you drinking tonight?
Woodbox Cider Company Old Goat Farmhouse Sour Cider.
Okay. That sounds better than what NPC's drinking. Poppy, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a martini with a little twist of lime in there.
What is the, please tell me it's gin.
It's vodka. We didn't have any gin. I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
There is nothing wrong with a vodka martini.
We did not have any gin. This was very last minute. I thought we were doing something else tonight.
What's your vermouth?
I don't know. Well, we ever had in the cabinet.
That's fine.
I was so excited that we had a lemon in the fridge. I don't know what its purpose was, but it now has a little bit of its skin.
If you did a lemon twist, though, I will respect you a lot more.
Yeah, there's a little lemon. I mean, it's kind of a slice, and it's not very pretty, but it...
Don't worry, it's quarantine, baby.
Yeah, this is a quarantine.
So I am drinking Early Times Bottled in Bond Kentucky Bourbon 100 Proof, just as the good Lord intended.
Hey, Xander, what's your take on a gimlet? Okay.
I don't know that I've ever actually had a gimlet.
It's not something that I go and seek out, but, it's an older school cocktail, and that's fine with me, and I'm cool with that. But not my personal taste. I think there's better things you can do with gin.
There's a school of thought where if you're drinking a vodka martini, you should be drinking a vodka gimlet instead. So...
Yeah, because you should never drink a book. Okay. No offense, Poppy.
Oh, no, I'm not offended at all. This was what we had.
I think Poppy's outfit this evening more than makes up for her drinking sins.
Oh, I could not agree more. Poppy is popping right now.
Oh,
Art Deco all the way.
Ooh.
Thank you.
No, she is looking like sharper than a scalpel, hotter than a serrano pepper. No, she's looking great.
Oh, thank you.
Well, speaking of things sharper than scalpels, that was weak. You're listening to Bikers Dice and Bars, and actually now you're hopefully also watching Bikers Dice and Bars, because we are both recording and streaming live here in Portland, Oregon during these quarantine times. I'm NPC.
I'm Just Jacob.
I am the good Dr. Xander Gerrymander.
And I am Poppy Beaujolais.
Ooh.
On the fucking nice. Blue Yeti, because Nathaniel hates me. I'm just kidding. This is
it's an okay mic for this purpose.
This is actually working really well. He's got it set up so that I can actually hear myself through the headphones and there's not a delay, which means I don't feel like I have to yell. It means I can actually talk at my normal volume, and it actually is kind of nice.
One of the benefits of headphones, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Definitely. So I wanted to talk about something that has just been fresh on my mind before we even get to our actual intended subject matter today. I need to give a mad shout out to the Mega Dumbcast. I have been following this guy on Twitter and Instagram for a while, but I only finally started listening to it. And it is this guy is going page by page, one page per episode, talking about the dumbest thing on each page of various Palladium books. Right now, he's going through Beyond the Supernatural.
And it took all of 3 minutes to break Jacob. Let's write that on the books, ladies and gentlemen.
Most amazing stuff. His comedy is on point. His cadence is fantastic. His timing is wonderful. I think my most favorite quote so far was one I was listening to just before this. And it was right now he's in Beyond the Supernatural and he's talking about psychics and how fucking weird they are. And he refers to a power, the demon punch power, as asserting the supremacy of your fists up for all of creation. I was like, oh, God, I love it. He's got a way of words that reminds me of Brad Neely of Wizard People, Dear Reader fame. Yeah,
I have a lot of fond memories of playing Beyond the Supernatural, but that book is like a masterclass in failures of art direction and layout and proofreading.
Yeah.
Oh, so all of my college textbooks must have been the same company.
He talks about one of the psychic abilities in there called psychic surgery, which he basically describes as the most satanic heavy metal power available to all psychics anywhere. Like, yes.
Where do I sign up for that?
Oh, I remember Nega Psychics in that game. How to make the rest of the party hate you.
Yeah. I really wanted to get him to do both original old school Palladium Fantasy First Edition and Nightbane.
Oh.
I would love to see this guy or hear this guy read through
what's
the dumbest thing on each page of Nightbane.
In the early aughts, there was a webpage, and I think it's gone now. I'll have to dig around and see if it's still around, where it lists artistic works from Palladium and lists all of the different Palladium books that they appear in. Because they reuse their art over and over again. And And it's like the first listing on the entire page is almost always Beyond the Supernatural.
Yeah. I think one of the most used pieces, I first encountered it in second edition Palladium Fantasy, was the picture of the assassin. But I've seen every other system use that same picture. This time it's a demon. This time it's a soul reaver. This time it's a nightwalker or something. You're like, oh, come on. Anyway, I could rant about Palladium for a long time. I must note, I am a fan.
I am also a fan.
I actually deeply love Palladium games and will play them until the end of my days. You will take my old school first edition Palladium Fantasy book out of my cold dead hands. But it is hilarious listening to someone else who was also a fan rag one.
Oh yeah. So that's
I do love that.
That's the dumbcast. That's the dumbcast, right?
Mega Dumbcast, Mega Dumbcast in DC.
Oh, I missed that completely.
Yeah. Poppy, I think you need to move the mic a little bit closer because it's got a threshold and it's not quite picking you up immediately when you start
scoot.
Talking.
If I scoot closer, though, my cleavage will be out of shot. I hope that's okay.
All you just got to do is angle the camera down a little bit. Anyway, that's all you. That's a very nice necklace. Where'd you get that?
Oh, a lovely, lovely, handsome, bearded, bald gentleman gave this to me 1 year for Christmas.
Who's that?
It was you.
Oh, okay.
Nah, okay, anyway. Done being schmoopy. Back to business.
We actually scheduled a topic to talk about today.
Which I totally missed, so I'm very surprised. I thought we were talking about something else tonight.
This could be educational for you, and you could even probably at some point talk about one of your special creations when we get to that.
Yes.
But this is sort of a companion piece to a previous episode that we did where we talked about bottles, cans, growlers, and various ways to drink booze. Well, today we're taking that same analogy and pushing it to tabletop role-playing games, and we'll be talking about dice, cards, and all the various major focal tools of gaming.
Index cards.
Jacob, you want to take it away?
Well, yeah. I mean, when we think about gaming, especially when it comes to role-playing, you have your standard tools, your rule books, your character sheets. Nowadays, tablets are coming in, pencils, pens, yada, yada, yada. But then there's the physical dice and other bits and bobs that really, really drive play. Whether it's the physical dice you roll, whether it's the bennies that you get play out, other mechanisms. We're here to talk about all of those other tools that we use to expand the play environment.
Okay, so bennies? Question mark? What is?
We'll get to that in a bit, but they're Yeah. We'll get to that in a bit. Okay. It'll all in due time.
And you're not talking about benzodiazepines.
You know, I guess you could use benzos as bennies in that kind of a game. Because, you know, there is Freebase, the live action role-playing game of real life.
Oh, God. Moving on, anyway.
Moving on. I first got into role-playing games, tabletop style, when I was like 8. My brother had stayed over one night, and in the middle of the night, he asked me if I wanted to play a game, and it was just a game of the imagination. I was a knight, and he told me what happened, and that was it. No chance, nothing like that. But then, at another one of his visits, he brought his D&D set, and all I saw were the dice. Those weird colors and different shapes, and my brain fixated on those things. As just the most amazing things I'd ever seen. Wonderful things. I had to have some. I think I shoplifted my first set of dice.
Jesus.
I think it was from a B. Dalton booksellers.
Oh.
But B. Dalton, if you're looking to sponsor a podcast.
They don't exist anymore.
And that.
No, I think they got bought out by Barnes & Noble. We're sorry.
And that, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you can't prove anything, B. Dalton. Fuck off.
That so shoplifting of dice is what put B. Dalton out of business.
Also, the fact that I worked for them when I was like 14 years old and I was really shitty at it. 14 or 15. I was really
It was
young.
An inside job.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh,
it's
God.
It's hard to work at a bookstore when you can't alphabetize, turns out. Hard to work at a bookstore when you're dyslexic, it turns out.
Don't you know the Dewey Decimal System?
Oh, no. I had to
Conan the librarian. Oh, my God.
Thank you, Jacob.
I had to literally have the alphabet printed out so that I could go put books away.
Hey, whatever tool you need.
Anyway, sorry. Moving on. Nathaniel, you had a story.
Just saying, it was the dice that brought me in. And what's amusing is that now, in my 40s, I actually have really heavily begun to push away from dice and use other tools. But I still always have those dice as the things that suck me in. I don't have my first set of dice, but I do have my first dice bag still. But Oh God, just the magical mystery of looking at those little chance stones and what those numbers meant just sent my brain into many different dimensions. 9-year-old me didn't know what to do. And now here I am 31 years later, addicted.
Yeah. I mean, there are a few things more kind of majestic to me than just the hearing of like the dice rattle as they hit the floor and kind of go and determine your fate. And it's as much as I have been enjoying doing our Discord role-playing games, like we have to go and use like the Dice Maiden or whatever we're using right now on Discord. But like, I just want to roll dice in front of me instead and like have people believe me when I roll something. Because I'll be honest.
You know, I'm open to that discussion for our Hammercraw games because I roll my dice locally. I even have a microphone set into my dice tray.
I know we hear it, and I want to have the same sound on my end as I roll dice. And like,
can you angle the camera for a second so we can see your dice mic? Or is that too complicated?
I have it pushed. This is a modular table setup, so the Hammercraw setup has been moved away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I just love the sound, and the sound brings me back. And I want to, like, the hardest thing with social distancing is not having the sound of dice roll for me right now.
On my online Witcher game, we run that through Roll20. And it was a point of pride for one of our game members to make a mark on their character sheet every single time they had an exploding die in that game. Because usually it meant everything in sight is catching on fire. And since we switched to virtual, she's really, really offended that she's gotten 2 criticals in over 2 months of play. Whereas prior to that, in the 2 months prior, she had 6.
And by exploding dice, you mean...
Rolls a 10 and rolls again and adds. So,
yeah. Generally, when a die explodes in most systems, basic terminology, you take that die, if it hits its highest number,
okay,
like if you're rolling a D6 and you get a 6, yeah, an exploding die or a pop or an ace, depending upon what group you grew up with and trained you in the lexicon, could mean either you take another die of the same size, like if a D6 pops, you roll another D6 and add it to it, or instead... Like, I think some versions of Shadowrun do. If you roll a D6 and it hits a 6, you take another D6 and roll it as a separate die. Because then each die could give you a chance at an additional success.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah, thank you. That's a basic terminology that I did not know. I did not know what exploding dice was.
The more you know.
Add in the little sound clip here in post.
I can't wait to do that in post. Yeah.
That works.
Wait,
Jacob, what's your dice story?
What's my dice story? Let's see. My first set of dice that didn't come out of a board game like Monopoly or something was a friend of mine back in second grade when we were getting into Red Rocks, Dungeons and Dragons, Marvel Super Heroes, and Star Frontiers. I was from the wrong side of the tracks. He was from the right side of the tracks. He gave me a set of percentile dice, an extra one, because the Star Frontiers game he bought had 2 sets when it should have only had 1. So he gave me the spare. So my first set of dice was a 2D10 that I had to color in with a crayon because this was before pre-inks. I had those up until the point one of them literally...
Nice.
I had those up until the point one of them literally cracked.
Oh, wow. I didn't know dice could crack.
Oh, back in...
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day when they were injection plastic. Oh, God. They were cheap pieces of shit.
Huh. Yeah. I recently ordered a set of gaming tools from... I can't say. I can't say the name of the company because it's going to be a surprise. But it's something that I learned through another person that I communicate with online that this game from a long time ago still exists. Vintage copies being sold by the creator with original dice colored in my crayons. And hopefully it will arrive for the next week or so. And I cannot fucking wait to show it on the air, but it's going to be rad. That's all I had.
Thanks. Thanks. Tease. Now,
Poppy.
Tease.
Poppy, yes. As a new gamer, mm-hmm. What was your first experience working with gaming dice? Sorry, I'm going to preface this by making sure that anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about knows that when we talk about gaming dice, we mean gaming dice that are standard of your classic D6 or six-sided die, but you also have a D4 or four-sided die, a D8, a D10, a D12, and a D20. Classic. Anyway, Poppy.
So when my very first RPG that I played ever, which was back in 1997, and I played Mage for like a hot minute and just had no idea what was going on. Like, I honestly don't remember if there was dice. I mean, I really don't remember. It was a long time ago.
I mean, it's
ago.
White Wolf. So there might not have been, depending upon how you were playing.
I mean, it was what? 23 years ago.
I mean, come on, it's also Mage. The game's core mechanic is, can you argue the GM into agreeing that it's possible with your set of spheres?
Yeah, and that was the thing. The GM just didn't let me do anything. So I was like, this is stupid. Why are we doing this? Anyway, so
sorry.
I guess
that sucks.
I guess then my first experience would then be that Monster Hearts game that we played, or I played at Game Storm a couple of years ago.
Was it the best weekend of your life?
I can't remember. Did we play that at Game Storm, or was that at someone's house?
No, we played that at one of our friends' house. Yeah.
Maybe. Best night of your life.
I think you went with me to best weekend of your life.
Best weekend of your life. Yes. Yes, I just don't remember that. Yeah, I think so. It was either at that person's house or it was at Game Storm, because I was very nervous because I hadn't played a role playing game since I was 16 and I did not enjoy that experience. So I think that was my first. Nathaniel, you ended up buying me my first set of dice. Later that same year, I think we went to an event at Guardian Games. All I remember is it was winter. It was like October, November or something. And you bought me a set of my first set of polyhedral dice. But yeah, I don't
love at first dice.
Love at first dice. Yes, I still have them. They're blue. I didn't have the same like reaction to the dice. My nervousness was more around the like being a good storyteller and not being lame. But also like, you want me to talk about my dice guide, don't you?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I was going to bring it up later, but let's just go now.
It's somewhere over there. But I have
it's somewhere behind me and I'm not going to go
somewhere behind
grab
you. That's totally fine. So I have my brain is different, you know, I have not necessarily a neurotypical brain. And I have a hard time with numbers and with spatial relation kind of stuff. So dice are a little bit of a conundrum for my brain sometimes. And whenever we play, it's gotten a little bit better now that I've been playing more, but whenever we play, I really prefer the D6s that have the numbers on them instead of the pips. Cause for some reason that's easier, which is odd. And it may have more to do with my compulsion to discount all the dots. But anyway, I had a really hard time remembering which dice were which, because the D12s and the D20s looked an awful lot alike. And, you know, all the D's, I couldn't keep them straight. So I made myself all the D's, so many D's. So I made myself, I took like this little like random piece of paper and traced all the dice on this piece of paper and wrote what they were underneath them. And then I just had the dice sitting in like each little spot on the paper, because I couldn't look at the dice at first and be like, roll a D10. I'm like, which one is that? You know, roll a D12. Which one is that? You know? So I couldn't tell visually right away. So this little dice guide was actually really handy. And I was just like, I don't give a shit if people think that's weird. I'm going to do what I got to do. I'm like, you know, I was like in my 30s. I'm like, I don't give a shit what people think. But that was one of the little tools I came up with, to be able to sort of like play more quickly and not be like, which one is that again? You know, like, although I still sort of struggle with the percent, like percentiles and like what is what? What is what on the percentiles? And then telling the percentile apart from like the D8. I think the D10s and the D8s kind of bugger me.
You're not the only person I've run into
in a game where you can play. That's why we need to get you into a game where you can play a true wild mage. And I'm going to get you to start rolling a D10,000.
That sounds terrible. As long as you're going to help me with the math, that's fine. I also, so I have some, I have some dyscalculia too. So math is like, especially like trying to do math quickly and like in my, I can't do math in my head. So and people are like, what, really? You can't do math in your head? Like, no, really, I can't do math in my head. The same way I can't not sub-vocalize when I read.
With the math thing, like Chris Street, whenever he's playing with us, because I'm kind of the same, I'm always like, numbers, shit, I can't count on the fly. I'm always like, Chris, add it. And he just like looks at it and immediately tells us the number.
That's amazing. Oh,
dude,
that's
an
amazing
like, talent. Chris is the most amazing. Like, I used to play like League of Legends with him, and I'd be like, just tell me what I need to go and get from my character. And he's like, well, if you're playing this and like calculating this, pushing your opponents, and he was like fucking calculating numbers in his head like a madman. Buy this, this, amazing. And upgrade to this and this based on armor penetration and damage plus like insane.
Yeah.
The man's brain is insane.
Like you'll see me like drawing little things like on my paper to like count up my numbers and like counting on my fingers. And like, I mean, it's which is fine. Like, I'm not saying this is wrong. Like you got to figure out your workarounds, you know? And I think
using that common core math,
I don't even know what that is because when I tell you what, like, no, when I was in grade school, we did what was called CSMP and Google it. CSMP.
Nope. That involves that sounds like it involves checking off boxes to figure out how to divide, and I don't cotton with that sort of thing.
Actually, it was we used these computer boards that were all base 10, and it was actually kind of a groovy idea, but it didn't like when I got to junior high, we just went back to like regular math, and so like it was just bad.
That sounds like some of this metric system nonsense that I just can't get behind.
Before American. We get too deep into the weeds on talking about dice stuff, I want to note that, Poppy, your dice guides have been very well loved by, I think, everyone you've shown them to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I keep meaning to, like, make some and, like, laminate them and, like, give them to people. And I just, that's just never happened, unfortunately. So someday, maybe, I will. But I now I want to go find it. When we take a break, I'll go find it.
Okay, we can do that. Now, we've talked about the standard dice. I do want to make an interesting observation. That I remember in my youth, whenever I would buy a set of dice from the gaming store, they would always come in a set of 9. You would have the D4, the D8, the D10, the D100, the D12, the D20, and then 3 six-sided dice.
Yep.
Every dice set at my store came that way. Now, that's just not how they're sold anymore. Like, now I go to the store and dice sets always come in that little Chessex brick that has just the 7 dice. The core 6 plus the D100.
They do still... I
miss those.
They do still sell the tubes, but they're not as common. And usually they're sold in the same rack where they have tubes of D6 and tubes of D10 also. So, now with the Chessex brick or the designer case to get you to invest money in the Art Deco forest clockwork, whatever the fuck Norse rune style dice that are impossible to read from across the fucking table.
Oh, the metal dice are very pretty.
I need a fucking rant here. All these goddamn Kickstarters keep coming out selling all of these fancy metal dice. You do not get to use those dice on my fucking gaming table. That's all I'm saying. Like, isn't metal dice are the worst fucking things. Yeah, they're so heavy and they thump and they leave dents. Whoever, like, all these people want these metal dice, and I'm like, get off my fucking lawn. Anyway, rant off.
It's because they're pretty and shiny.
NPC sounding like me for a change.
Yeah. So now, games are using funky dice. We have a few different types of funky dice. So there's what are actually frequently called the funky dice or the Zochi dice, which are the D3, the D5, the D7, the D, oh God, what am I, D14, D16, D24, and D30, or the Dungeon Crawl Classics
dice. Oh, that's right.
Dice step, dice strain, whatever they call it.
Tube of dice.
I love those dice. I love them dearly. But showing them to someone who's never seen them is always amusing because the look on their face is like, what? What is that? But
it is the wombat poop of the dice world.
Yeah. Those dice, there are very few games that use all of those dice. GCC has that, like, that's their thing, but I haven't seen that many other games that use them. Actually, I can't think of any other games that use them.
Sorry, I got distracted. But somebody who's watching the Twitch stream said I look hot. Sorry.
Oh. I mean, yeah. You do.
Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks, Brandon.
Sorry, I interrupted
but
you.
But then we've taken that a step further and started taking the gaming dice and removing the numbers and replacing them with weird-ass symbols. The first games that I experienced, I mean, you know, board games have been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
HeroQuest. And once again, another shout out to Alex of Buddy Eye Games. Broadsword is the spiritual successor to HeroQuest, basically uses the same dice, and we're hoping to play it on the stream soon.
Awesome.
Beyond that, beyond like board game implementations, Fantasy Flight Games started with the Warhammer Fantasy 3rd Edition role-playing game. And it was a drastic change from the 1st and 2nd Edition, in which they replaced the standard D100 rules with all of these color-coded dice that had strange symbols that meant something in the world. But if you didn't know anything about the world and had not read the rules of the game, you would see those dice and just be like, what the fuck am I looking at? And then that game tanked because of many reasons, but I loved the dice and they brought them back with Star Wars. Arguably to date, the most successful implementation of Star Wars as a role-playing game. I know everybody's got their favorite edition, but this one has been really successful. And they've brought it to Legend of the Five Rings now, and they've done Genesis, which is their universal version of the same system. I'm a fan. Jacob, Xander, Poppy, opinions?
Not many.
I have no opinion.
I happen to, in principle, like the idea of the weirdo dice with symbols that mean things. I have to say that the implementation in Star Wars left me real, real cold. But that's an implementation issue. There were times where I've watched a couple different GMs. I have yet to game that run that system myself, but I played in a couple different games. And where whatever plan the GM had got blown completely off the rails by, you know, what the dice did. And literally, doing any pre-plot planning in that game is a nightmare, apparently.
Okay. I can see that.
But that's an implementation thing. The idea behind them, I believe, is sound.
Bobby. Now,
Nathaniel, are those the same dice that inspired Hammer Crawl?
Yes.
So
Hammer Crawl is a game that was, I ultimately decided I needed to write a game that was 100% randomly generated, and I wanted to make use of the Warhammer Fantasy 3rd Edition dice because I had sold all of the rest of my Warhammer 3rd Edition collection except a set of the dice, because I was like, I am going to use these dice in something else. And that's how I did Hammer Crawl. And now I've gotten rid of the Warhammer dice and I'm using Genesis dice because they're more easily available.
Well, but here's the thing about that, Nathaniel, and we could talk about this offline, but I'm always a little disappointed when someone in a hammer crawl game says huzzah and you don't use the huzzah dice.
Oh, I do. I just have a different one.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's in the rules. There is the huzzah rule is there, and I embrace it mightily.
Y'all need to take that one offline, I think.
Because okay. I feel like you missed
Timba embraced wisely. Or something like that.
His arms open.
Yes.
Anyway.
Taking it even a step further, there's lots and lots and lots of novelty dice.
Oh, yeah.
But these are two of my favorite. I have the random dungeon corridor die.
Oh, yeah. Those are cool.
And, of course, everyone's favorite, the D12
hit location
die. Yeah.
I'm a huge...
There's nothing more fun than saying, I stab him in the left foot.
I'm a huge fan of that.
They're kind of like sexy dice. But instead of, like, lick armpit, it's like stab in kneecap.
And then there are other implementations of dice, such as fudge dice with the plus and minus on it, which is merely doing the same statistical thing that a D6 does in a less granular fashion. But,
I'm sorry, my cat is getting into... some shenanigans over here. Okay, he's... Okay.
Oh, Lord.
We're good.
I've got dozens of Inkwell Ideas makes these random dungeon room dice, and these are the primary method for generating dungeons in the way I run Hammercrawl. You just reach into the big old special custom Crown Royal bag and grab a die and roll it.
Would that be a vanilla Crown Royal?
That was the vanilla, yes.
Very nice.
Very nice.
Very nice. How's that beer settling in you there, Nathaniel?
It's terrible. Yeah. Yeah, it's fucking terrible.
Still terrible.
Brandon wants us to work sexy dice into Hammer Crawl, so we're going to see if we can do that. That said, consent, you know.
I mean, that would be a special offline Hammer Crawl.
All I'm going to say...
The hammer is my penis crawl.
All I'm going to say is that isn't happening unless Brandon promises to bring sexy back as part of it.
Mm.
Okay, yeah. The hammered crawl.
Hammered? Is that like Drunkest Dungeon?
Like the entire quest is to bring sexy back. You have to find sexy and bring it back.
We could make that a dungeon. Yeah. We'll talk about that later. Anyway, any thoughts on what we talked about so far before we move on to other tools?
I would like to hear sort of like all y'all's sort of opinions, like pros and cons of using dice in an RPG, a tabletop RPG.
I do have some thoughts on this, actually. One of my frustrations with the D20 system has always been the fact that, like, you can be so well trained on a thing and you roll a one and it's like that shouldn't happen in real life, where you just fuck up and like blow up immediately.
I mean, that happens.
Which is why I've kind of liked what was that?
I mean, but that happens, right? I mean,
not usually.
Because not everything you do in reality has a perfectly 5% chance of fucking you up.
Right.
Right. Okay.
But not everything you do in reality involves you getting stabbed by goblins simultaneously either.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about your life, Jacob.
I don't know. Like, Jacob, what line of work are you in?
You know, I try to keep my personal life and my work like separate. So the stabbings in my personal life are slightly worse than in my work life.
I have it on good faith that a significantly large tribe of goblins does frequent McMiniman's restaurants. So I think Xander's got his beat there.
Yes.
Thank you.
True.
Thank you.
True.
Anyway, when you have like a D6 system in which like, you know, a 5 or a 6, you know, succeeds like in the Shadowrun realm, like that, and you have a much larger dice pool and able to go and actually like roll that kind of thing, it makes a lot more sense to me if you're already skilled in that thing to be successful, as opposed to like, again, that 5% chance you just like fuck up horribly, because that's not as realistic in my opinion. And that's why I like those systems better.
You gave me a thought here, Xander. I do want to give a quick shout out to someone who will never hear this, Matt Carter from my Shadowrun second edition games back in high school. Maybe it was third edition. Rolled the single largest dice pool I've ever seen rolled in any game that I've run as a rigger, very specialized in driving his pickup truck that he had put die coat on the bumpers, was reversing it and running into a bug spirit, rolling 36 dice over a bug spirit.
Yeah. That beats the record Shadowrun die pool that I've seen, which was 34. So.
See, yeah. That is reasonable to me in that kind of system. If you have that much skill in that, you should be able to have that big of a die pool to go and like just fuck everything up. And if at that point you roll no successes, then like, yeah, maybe you had a bad day.
Yeah.
I remember specifically the action, too. They were trying to get out of an area in Chicago because Bug City is the best Shadowrun book ever.
Fuck yeah.
They were trying to get out of an area in Chicago. They were being chased by an insect spirit and it was catching up. And Matt's like, I just put that shit in reverse.
Boom.
I've got this much control pool, this many dice. I've got this thing which doubles this dice pool. I've got this, I've got this, I've got this.
I got two edges and reflex, bitch.
You have 36 motherfucking dice.
No, exactly. And so in those systems, I think are much more adept at being able to go and have a more realistic outcome of your role. Because if you fail at that point, like you had a really, really, really fucking off day as opposed to like, I am the most skilled archer in the world and I'm going to go roll to shoot a gop. Okay. That's a natural one. Fuck my life.
Yeah. I was sitting here thinking about the number of times I have fallen down the stairs in my house in the last.
That has more to do months. With your dex score of 8.
Well, no, that's the thing. Like I'm usually pretty I'm clumsy. It's a good sometimes, start to a sentence,
but continue.
But I'm not like super clumsy. Like I'm short, which means like I am jumping up on countertops and doing stuff all the time. Like I'm pretty, like I feel like I'm reasonably dexterous, you know. But these fucking stairs, I think I have fallen down them maybe 3 times. Ooh. In 13 months, and I don't know how many were like near misses, you know, or whatever, but like twice I have fallen and like busted my tailbone. Oof. On these fucking stairs. And I don't know, like I couldn't tell you how many times a day I go up and down these stairs. So I couldn't calculate the like percentage of that. But like, Xander, all of this is to say, like, I get what you're saying. Like, I am a fully grown adult. I've been walking for 38 years, let's call it. I've been doing stairs for I don't know how long, you know, since I was 2, let's say, I don't know, a while. And every now and then I like my heel slips off the goddamn stairs, you know. But is that a 5% chance? Probably not. But my question to that is, isn't that what modifiers are about?
Well, so I get there's a small. So first of all, I'd like to say there's a bit of a difference between the tools of the trade, the dice themselves, and the implementation of them, which gets into statistics and a whole bunch of other things. And like Nathaniel and I can geek out forever regarding probabilities and the D6 curve of, you know, the differences between Deadlands first edition and Deadlands second edition and all of that sort of thing. But when it comes to the dice, I think, in my opinion at least, that Xander hit on a key thing. Shadowrun is a game about hyper competence, like hyper competence. You start
competence porn.
Yeah, it is very much a competence porn game. And nothing.
If you're a fan of the show Leverage, I think Shadowrun is a fantastic game to play a leverage style game.
Leverage is also a leverage, anyway, is a Jake. Perfect leverage style game to play because it got its own RPG. Yes. And is also pretty decent. But if you're playing a competence porn game and the tools at the table are this whack of dice that you've pulled together from skill and investment and resources, and you are rolling a double handful of dice, it gives you that visceral feel that you are amongst the best of the world. Now, that said, I absolutely hate massive dice pool systems, especially like in the White Wolf system where it was, you know, modifying how many dice you get versus what your target number is and all that bullshit. That that got old real fast. And I got so done with Shadowrun and D6s because I inherently hate the D6 statistical curve. But, you know, that's an entire side conversation.
I feel like let's bookmark this for later just Jacob. I think there's this entire side conversation about how to try to recreate an authentic human experience.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Of like, this is my collective life experience all going into this one action.
Yeah, the bald dude down in the corner and I can like wax poetic on that for like probably an hour at least.
I mean, clearly the best portrayal of the human experience is the Twitter comments.
Right? Okay,
I
Chad.
Really like Imgur comments. The Imgur comments are kind of where it's at.
Well, okay, we could dive real deep into dice probabilities and all that. Jacob, you and I were talking about this earlier, and we were like, no.
Yeah.
That could be two episodes all on its own.
Oh, yeah.
So the whole other thing.
Again, yeah, let's set that aside for another topic. Let's move on from dice, then, into the next major tool, which is a tool that's actually more available around the world than dice, and that's playing cards.
Playing cards. Oh. Your classic poker or pinochle deck.
You can buy playing cards at every convenience store known to man.
Most gas stations.
But you can't always buy dice at them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Playing cards are, I had never personally experienced playing cards. Well, let me start that over. A few years back, I had only ever experienced playing cards in a game such as Savage Worlds or Deadlands, where they weren't the main mechanism of play. They had a side component, or they enhanced the game in a certain way, but they weren't the primary tool for conflict resolution. So I imagine there were probably many games out that had done this by this time. I don't think it was anything new that I had invented, but by the time this was fucking 2008, 2005 or something like that, when I put out my first game, Cannibal Contagion, which used playing cards entirely, I remember at the time still going to conventions and game stores having to tell people this uses cards, and they're like, what?
Yeah. No, you
cards.
You'll still blow people's heads away with that. So when did you start out with Deadlands? Were you first edition, second edition?
Around 2005.
So the original Deadlands, the Orange Book series, used playing cards in two different ways. One is the classic Savage Worlds initiative system, where you use them to determine initiative. And they used it in several other ways. The Huckster class, which is the one of the spellcasting classes, it's the one who uses the encoded occult lore within Hoyle's Book of Games to enact spells, i.e., to be perfectly honest, what I see Doctor's gerrymander being if he ever plays Deadlands.
Yeah, totally.
Casting spells actually involved playing a mini hand of poker. And there were multiple other ways in the original first edition that cards came into place. And
because every cast of a spell, you were making a deal with the devil.
You were dealing with the devil, and so you drew and you played the hand.
So, other games, Jacob, that you remember?
So, there's been a couple others that came out. Some of the what I've often found is games get designed to use cards, and then they back off and go the easy route of D10. For instance, if you ever pick up a copy of this game, and I can understand why you might not.
I've heard it was terrible.
It's a nightmare. but here's...
And for anybody listening, that was Cthulhu Tech.
Yeah, Cthulhu Tech. Yeah. It's an interesting game for a couple different reasons. I don't recommend it for a whole lot of reasons, but a lot of why it got bagged from a mechanic standpoint as opposed to a content standpoint was its dice mechanics were absolutely wonky. There's a throwaway comment in the explaining how to play that you actually can play the game with cards. And as a experiment, I ran a game where we did it all with cards rather than with dice. And when playing with cards, suddenly it didn't seem to be nearly as weird and swingy. And it seemed that the probabilities evened out and it flowed smoother and actually resolved a hell of a lot quicker. As long as you can keep the hand size that a player is juggling in check, cards actually are a huge tool for driving player choice at the table and enabling players to have more of a voice in their success or loss. You can also drive the anxiety of whether or not a specific action succeeds or fails, because rather than leaving it up to the fate of the gods and the random dice roll, they have to pull a card from their hand and play it. They have to make the choice.
Xander, we haven't heard from you in a bit. Any thoughts on the current subject?
I mean, I've not had a lot of experience in playing these types of games, so I don't really have a lot of just... I don't have opinions on what I have not played. Is what it boils down
to. Fair enough. So have you never played any games that use playing cards?
I think you played
in Savage Worlds with us a bit. And Savage Worlds used playing cards as initiative.
I have not played Savage Worlds with you guys.
You did. It was the Savage Worlds Five Fingers game where everybody was restarting the City Watch. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You were a baker, I believe.
With my gun mage. because of course it was a gun mage.
Yeah.
So what I'm understanding is that we need to get a Moto Bushido game going at some point.
Yeah. So Moto Bushido is my second game. It's a game about motorcycle riding samurai, kind of Sons of Anarchy meets Seven Samurai story. And
it's Firefly.
Yeah, there's some of that in there, I guess. It's a lot of fun. Actually, my first playtests of Moto Bushido, they decided that they were Jedi fleeing the Imperial Purge. So that was fun. Wasn't even samurai. Because, you know, Jedi are really just space samurai. That's it. Until you get into, like, the prequels and where they're flying laser ninjas.
You mean until when the series died on its own lightsaber. Yeah.
Well, Star Wars is only three movies, remember. Right. Only three movies. There's only three.
Yeah, Poppy. Only three movies.
Yeah.
I will make space in my heart for the Battle of Endor.
I loved those movies as a kid. The Ewok films. Yes. But it's a game about dueling, using the cards as a limited resource and knowing that... Knowing what cards have been played and what cards you have in your hand and what cards are on the table is actually one of the whole focuses of the game, because there's so much that look between the players that really makes the game, which is why it's been really hard for me to run the game online, because it lacks that tangible component. But there's other games. Yay. Hey, Moto Bushido. Hey. Good. I'd also brought mine out. Yeah. That's a beautiful cover from Rick Marks, another local.
Thanks, Rick.
The art is that is fabulous. If we ever play that, though, I have to insist we play with all the rights of play, where there is the greeting of the table, the salute of the salute of the group, et cetera, et cetera. You know.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You did amazing work in
all
there.
All those. Yeah. Thank you. Other games that use cards that I know of, at least a handful. There's one called Against the Dark Yogi, which had a sequel or sort of a same system, different setting called Shadows Over Seoul.
Yes.
Which uses playing cards, but it uses playing cards more traditionally.
Yep.
Like you use the cards for their numeric value to beat a target number. It's the same as rolling a die, except you know what you have kind of thing, so you can make judgments. Duty and Honor and Beat to Quarters are indie games about the Napoleonic era wars, both the field parts of the war and then the fighting on the sea. Fantastic games, but they are incredibly focused on the drama of the moment using playing cards.
And I've never played Duty and Honor, but I have played Beat to Quarters. And again, talk about having the physical object at the table drive the feel of the game. That's very much the case. And, you know, as someone who's done a little bit of sailing in the, over their life, you know, rolling dice on the deck of a ship just doesn't work all that well. So the feel of cards just feels better for Beat to Quarters. I know Scott has played Beat to Quarters before, and he's like on my wish list of games to play with this particular person. Playing Beat to Quarters with Scott is high on my list.
Definitely. 100% agreed. And Scott, if anyone's not sure who you were talking about, go back and listen to our Tales from the Loop live play. Scott plays Rasmus.
Oh, yeah. And he's awesome as Rasmus.
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
he
does.
And he hates this place.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, it's so good.
So we're talking about tabletop tokens, bennies, aces, pocket modifiers, et cetera, et cetera. They're the...
I'm sorry. Jacob, I'm sorry. I'm very distracted right now. Damn, Poppy.
I've switched to Jameson.
Not wrong.
I've switched to Jameson. I was trying to be away from the mic because I was chewing.
Nope, not wrong.
You set yourself up in a nice shot there. Hey. We were basically just getting all the jewels. It was great.
You know what, NPC? I'm your wife.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you lucky son of a bitch.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Man,
you know what I'm saying?
Oh, y'all. Okay,
anyway, Jacob.
So we're talking about tokens, bennies, et cetera, et cetera. Since the introduction, there were a couple games prior to it, but the one that first appeared on the scene that really introduced bennies to the world was Savage Worlds and Deadlands. Bennies were the physical tokens that got given out to players and game masters to say, I get to modify this situation. Deadlands was great because you got to choose to re-roll rolls or modify rolls by being given poker chips.
Hmm. Again, Poppy had a question about that?
Yeah.
Shoot. So I'm making an assumption here and I want to check my assumption. Is Benny short for benefit?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So
why?
So
why are they called bennies or benefits instead of tokens? Or,
well, so the issue is that bennies are a mechanical system of physical objects that you as a game master hand out to players in order to give them a physical object that represents their ability to play with fate.
I think I know what you're asking, Poppy, which is the choice of name, right?
Yeah.
Why is it called that?
Yeah.
Now, I don't specifically know. I really couldn't exactly say, but I do know that when I was first learning to play Savage Worlds and I read the book and they called them bennies, for some reason I thought, of course, bennies. I don't know where that term came from, but Savage Worlds did not invent it. I think they might have invented it in a gaming use, but the term Benny, I think, has another meaning, and I think it might relate to poker or something along those lines. Or because Savage Worlds has a fast, furious, fun, kind of rugged adventure feel to it. Yeah.
I cannot tell you the etymology of the term.
And that's
I do know that through my work we have one of those chip in some pre-tax money things to a special card that you can buy like medicine with called a Benny card.
Right.
Oh, so you have an FSA. Got it.
In my line of work, a Benny is a benzodiazepine.
Yeah, you and I have the same understanding from our day jobs.
Yeah. I'm Googling this and there's just...
I've played RPGs with people from the military who think an RPG means something else. And
yeah,
of course, due to the overlap of certain of my circles, I know that, you know, DM means something very different. And
if you want to
play,
if you want to have a fun time, play any role-playing game with a air traffic controller, because every single acronym and shortening you have as a role-playing game is dual-purposed into air traffic control somehow, because they will DM a 20 on a crit to the line in order to get you by the stat no matter what.
Those were some words that I kind of understood.
But yeah, no,
Benny's... And I switched to sake.
Mm. Ooh, sake. Which one?
I don't remember, but I got it from the mom and pop wine shop. Thank you very much. They are delivering wine in our neighborhood.
Oh,
yes. You can do pickup, but they also are doing delivery in a certain radius. They're amazing. Yep.
Yeah.
So Benny's are tokens that indicate your ability to alter fate. Usually only heroes and major villains get them. And they are poker chips, little jewels. Some games make custom ones for them. You'll actually see several Kickstarters come out with custom bennies, et cetera, et cetera. And they just indicate that the player at any time can take one of those physical tokens and throw it at the GM and either re-roll or add a plus or somehow modify the flow of the game. But they're a physical stack that the player can hold in their hand and give them that tactile feedback that the fate of the game is in their hands. Poppy, you had a question.
So in real life, these would be called privilege.
You know, if there was a god and if the god gave out tokens that you could spend...
For anybody who's used to video games, especially older video games, almost the equivalent of an extra life or a one-up.
Cool.
Or a super bomb.
Anything that would let you try again.
Sort of a get-out-of-jail-free card.
At something you had just sucked at. Yeah.
Like to harken back to our last episode about classic games, a get-out-of-jail-free card. Yeah.
Exactly.
I want to give a shout here to Brandon, who's joining us on our Discord chat feed, which anybody else can do if you join us on Patreon. It's a very basic privilege. Thanks, Brandon. We appreciate it.
We really appreciate Benny's, it because hosting costs are a bitch.
Word. They are. So there's a game that we're playing. I'm currently playing with Brandon that I think Xander's playing on an alternate day with him as well, called Pugmire.
Yes, I am.
If you've followed this podcast for a while, we have a Pugmire character jam. It's a lot of fun. Well, in the Pugmire game, they have something called Fortune, which is like Benny's. And I got to say, Eddie Webb, designer Pugmire, you missed a golden opportunity here because you should have called them treats.
Oh, yeah.
Not wrong.
Because
The game calls them Fortune, and you put like tokens in a bowl, but then it shows this picture of this pug like reaching into the bowl to get the tokens. You should have called them treats, and that's what we've been calling them when we play. We call it the treat bowl, and you can spend a treat to reroll a die.
Oh my god, you could have NPC, like little golden dog bones.
I was going to say, do you want little golden dog bones? Because I have a friend who can probably do you up a batch.
Yeah. If you're down for that, I would love some tiny little golden dog bones for when we finally, eventually, one day, maybe... Hopefully, resume gaming in person.
We could get
this amazing gaming table behind me.
We could get a little treat jar. It'd be so cute.
So Benny's are those random physical dice that physical objects that involve swings of the game. They're used in different ways in other systems. One of my favorites that I used in a couple different systems was a bowl on the table that had just jewel stones in the bowl. And the GM starts with a certain number that are sitting in front of him, and he can use those to modify his die rolls. But every time he uses one, it goes to the bowl and goes to, if it's in the bowl, the players can pull it out of the bowl and use it. So as the game master and his nefarious forces of evil use those bennies and throw them into the bowl, he's loading up the heroes to succeed at the end.
I'm sorry, it's just too funny. I'm using my bennies to get loaded.
I use every benny I can to get loaded, but what do you want?
Just don't mix bennies and alcohol. I designed
the second game that I ever started playtesting was a tabletop game. It was actually through this game that I met a number of people that are local, some of my best friends, and Navita and Scott, both from our Tales from the Loop game, were in this game. We played it at Scott's old house, and it was a game I was testing, a very story-heavy game, where we used tokens just like that, like you were just describing, Jacob, to move back and forth to tell mm-hmm. a story. But even more than that, tokens, your character sheet had a list of traits and whatnot, and you moved tokens around on the sheet to designate when you had used something for good, and you got it back when you found a way to use it against yourself again. It was a fun method of going back and forth and back and forth, and we had a lot of fun with it, and I honestly think I should bring that back. The only thing that I remember from the setting that we made is that someone decided, because it was a narrative game and everybody could contribute, that all of the animals in the world were named after Mexican food.
Okay.
Yep. That
like
just happened.
Food or American Mexican food? Because like burrito in America,
there was a bunch of pork-like creatures were called taquitos. And then there were the chimichanga. It was so weird. It was so alternate. I think the guy who said it was high at the time, but we had a rule at the table and we stuck with it.
So that's Benny's. Let's go on to other tools of the table. NPC, do you have any you want to go to?
Well, I do actually have some that I want to put on the air and give a quick mention to, because I don't think I've quite done this yet. And these are all the tools that I use for Hammer Crawl. But first, it looks like Poppy has something she wants to show us.
So I have my dice guide here. It's a little worse for wear at the moment, but here it is.
You know, we need to get that archivally preserved, because I actually sent that out to a couple of colleagues of mine who do accessible gameplay development.
Oh, yeah.
And it has been adopted by a couple different organizations that work in accessible gameplay.
Oh, that's so amazing.
And you actually are holding something that's literally a piece of history.
So here's the original piece of paper. It was this piece of graph paper that somebody gave me.
Yeah.
And
you don't use that anymore. That goes in a archival file folder and we store that away, because that is a piece of gaming fucking history.
Yeah. Yeah. So there she is. And I would just I set it on the table and I just set my dice like on top of their spots. And then I know, I'm so excited it makes me very happy that other people have adopted this tool to make gaming easier for them.
NPC, I'm going to hijack a little bit here because I've been saving this one. In my free time, one of the things I do occasionally is volunteer as a game master for really, really super basic role-playing games for individuals experiencing disabilities. And
sign me up. No, I've done this before myself in my former homeland of Atlanta. I was a major proponent of exactly what you're talking about. So if you need other GMs, please bring me
up. You know, once schools actually get to meet again, we'll talk. We'll definitely talk. You'll have to go through a background check, yada, yada, yada.
Oh, my God.
Before I moved here, I was running a game with mostly blind players, and it was a lot of fun.
Very cool. Be just
more descriptive.
Yes. But like... We're talking about using tools like dyslexic friendly character sheets, like super simplified rules to get people in to allow them to learn the rules of social interaction, et cetera, et cetera. Poppy, I have now cribbed your sheet and used it a couple different times. And I just want you to know that your legacy lives on. Yay! In the faces of some people who were literally crying at the end of gaming sessions because they suddenly understood some key component of humaning.
Oh, that makes me so happy. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. It's my privilege.
That makes me so happy. And it was just, I mean, it's just a simple little thing, you know, like, but it's made such a huge difference in my ability to just like do things quickly. And again, it is tearing. So I need to like make a new one.
Yeah, you'd need to start saving that.
It's getting all dog-eared and everything. But if people are like really interested, like I will someday get off my ass and make like ones that I laminate, and I will just, you know, at first I was like, oh, sell them, but I'm like, fuck that, like I'll just give them out for free. Yeah,
let's you and I talk. I have a graphic designer lined up for when you're finally willing to take that step.
Beautiful. I love it. Let's do it.
So NPC, let's talk about alternative tools besides the nebulous bennies.
Dice cards. They're playing cards that are also
dice. Where did you get those? I have never seen those before.
There was a Kickstarter.
What?
NPC, I have a question. We're talking...
The deck of dice.
We're talking about a lot of alternative tools for at the tabletop. Where would people go to find these things?
That is an interesting topic of conversation.
Indeed.
I mean, obviously, you would always check your friendly neighborhood local gaming store.
Gaming stores frequently don't have the cooler stuff, unfortunately. And I don't say that as a way of disparaging our local gaming stores, because we are fortunate to have some awesome gaming stores. I want to give a shout out to two of them, specifically being Guardian Games locally.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best fucking gaming store I've ever been to. But the second best gaming store I've ever been to, which also happens to be in this area, Rainy Day Games.
Yes.
The only reason I say second best is because it takes me 45 minutes to get to you.
And, well, you know, it takes you 45. It takes me 15. Let me add a third. Rune and Board out here in Hillsboro. You know, you all haven't had a chance to see it. Mm-mm. But let me talk about a place.
Never heard of it.
It's a classic small game store, but like everybody who is a Rune and Boarder is a Rune and Boarder, and they're super protective. Like they make points about being family friendly, LGBTQ+ friendly,
cool.
and it's not over the top. You know, it's trying to be a part and a hub of a community, just like Guardian is.
Very cool.
So to answer your question, game stores have a lot of good stuff. And Guardian, I got to give them credit. They have a lot more stuff than I've ever seen at a game store. They have a good variety of tools, both RPG, board game, and everything. They have a lot of the little side stands, like the little, not quite a kiosk, but like one of those rotary 4-panel stands with a lot of hooks and whatnot, all kind of weird stuff. I found a lot of good stocking stuffers there. And I'm not saying this to look and advertise for them. I shopped there and I was surprised at their inventory, but they don't have my favorite stuff. I If anybody follows Hammer Crow, know that for years, and Poppy can definitely attest to this, I have been cultivating a collection of tools to run games on the fly without needing a book or a plan.
You and I both, brother.
Yeah. So Kickstarter and Drive-Thru RPG, or Drive-Thru Cards, depending upon your specialty, has led me down this path of awesome. The first one I want to talk about is what's called the Game Master's Apprentice. Or the Game Master, GM's Apprentice, I think is what it's called. And it's a deck that has fucking runes on it, probabilities, dice rolls, words, prompts, different aspects, belongings, names, catalysts, locations, virtues and vices, sights, sounds, smells, and tastes on it. These cards are 91% or so of how I run Hammer Crawl. I have these cards, and they have one for different themes. This is the fantasy deck. They have a sci-fi deck. They have a horror deck. They have a splatterpunk deck. A cyberpunk.
They have a splatterpunk deck.
Oh yeah, it's pretty awesome. Do you own that? It's got like it's yeah. I have all of them. They have a sea. They have a nautical fiction one. They have like 10 of them. I think 8 or 10 of them. I have them all.
You got to tell me where I can get one of the splatterpunk decks, because I need that for the Domino's game I'm working on.
It is from Larcenous Designs, and you can get all of them on Drive-Thru. I will definitely have links in this. This is one of the most useful tools I've ever used in a game. Nathan, thank you.
And these are called what again?
They are called the GM... So now that I'm talking about it, I can't remember the name of what they're called. I want to say they're the GM's apprentice or the GM's assistant. I think it's the GM's apprentice.
Okay.
I will correct myself if I'm wrong in the show notes.
Larcenous?
The next one I want to talk about, larcenous. Larcenous. Like larceny, but someone who is full of larceny is larcenous.
Larcenous. Okay.
Got it. Next, these are the short order hero cards.
Ooh.
It is billed as a game because you can play a little card game with these, but they are descriptive cards that have numbers on them for whatever need that you have, that have a picture of someone and also a trait. These are fantastic cards for quickly generating an NPC on the fly. And they happen to be made by someone just across the river up in Vancouver named Jesse. Jesse Butler made these, and there's a number of expansions for different
things. Oh, holy shit. Jesse made those?
Rock. Yep.
Oh, holy shit. That's amazing. I had no idea.
I've been cultivating this list for a while, and it turns out a lot of people live locally because there's a huge nerd scene in the Pacific Northwest.
We're kind of a nerd mecca. Yeah. We live in a very amazing bubble.
But the last one that I want to bring up, these are called Dungeon Challenge cards. Now, this guy who made these did a Kickstarter also called Outdoor Encounter Cards. There have been 4 of them so far. 4 decks of cards with randomized outdoor encounters. And they're really good. I have them all. But these take the fucking cake. Except for one problem. I hate the hexagonal design. They don't fit in my card boxes. Dungeon Challenge. Each one has a way to spice up your dungeon with story prompts and a little token board where you kind of move things along as events happen. Like this one is the beast hungers. Place a token on the first one and move it and whatever as different things trigger it until the beast comes rampaging through and eats all the party. I could go on and on and on about assistant cards. I actually have an array set up on a separate little board that I bring over just for running Hammer Crawl. It is an array of 5 decks of cards that I have over the last... Fuck, Poppy. When did I start running Hammer Crawl?
Oh my God. Well, when was the first time I went?
I think it was 10 years ago. Yeah.
No.
Well, no, nine
years. We've only been together 9 years this July. So.
So then that means, yeah, 8 years. 12. I took it again in summer 2012.
Yes.
And so that was when I first started doing Hammer Crawl, and you were there.
Yes.
And ever since then, I've been collecting these like helpful randomizers and tools. And this deck that I have assembled is perfection manifest for random role-playing games.
So
back to you, Jacob.
Can I talk about the granddaddy of them all for tabletop assistance for role-playing?
Ooh, please.
Yes.
The Jenga Tower.
I really thought now you we're getting about
really esoteric.
I really thought you were about to say like pencil or something.
Like, as the dude who nearly got kicked out of a gaming group by NPC for pulling a pen out to write a character sheet.
There's a thing that has been shown behind me in many of my videos, and it is this banner, and it says Streetwise.
Yeah, Streetwise.
Xander might know what I'm talking about here. Streetwise is it was a live action role playing game that I wrote that we ran at Dragon Con for 2001 through 2004.
Oh my God, like 20 and years ago. Fuck.
Yeah, right? Well, Streetwise was a live action role playing game. It was our big fuck you to Vampire. So we hated all the other LARP groups. So we decided the game to specifically fuck with all the other LARP groups. Long story short, our combat mechanic was not paper, rock, scissors. It was not dice. It was not anything you might think could be a combat mechanic. Instead, it was a game called Pencil Break. Every character in the game was given a life stick, which took the form of a pencil. And when you got into combat, you thwacked your life stick across the center of your opponent's life stick. And when your life stick was broken, you were dead.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, LARPs are a whole different set. Like Cornerstone Games, which is a nonprofit in the Portland metro area that runs LARPs and incubates a whole bunch of LARPs in the area. I mean, they do wonderful work. And Cornerstone. I said Cornerstone. I meant Hearthstone. Hearthstone Games. Mm. They incubate lots of LARPs. A lot of them involve creative systems, and their systems are way beyond the scope of this conversation. But I want to go and talk about the granddaddy of them all, which is Jenga.
Okay. So, I assume you're talking about Dread.
I am talking about Dread. So Dread was the first of several games that used the Jenga Tower, which is a tower of stacked wooden blocks. All of equal size, but every layer is stacked perpendicular to the other to decide whether or not you succeeded or failed at a trial.
That's cool.
And yeah, and it was specifically geared towards horror games. So the only mechanic in the game was the Jenga Tower that was set in the middle of the table. Given it was especially a convention game in the days I played it, it was usually a rickety fucking hotel house service table. And there's this Jenga table in front of it. So you go, so I'm trapped in an Antarctic base. I need to hack this computer. I'm going to try to hack this computer. The GM would look at you. No. They look you dead in the eyes and go, pull 1 to 3 blocks. And they'd set 1 to 3 based on how hard it was for your character to succeed at the task. If you were the computer programmer,
well done.
That's a one block pull. If you were the helicopter pilot, fuck you. That's a 3-box pull. And like, I will admit, due to accident and a PTSD and a whole lot of reasons, I shake a lot. So pulling blocks from a tower of Jenga is not in my skill set at all. You don't want me to be the one defusing a bomb. But that is still one of the most intensive stress building mechanics I've ever played, especially at 2 a.m. with the designer drunk off his ass trying to run a game.
Bobby?
So question. So if one of the mechanics is pulling a block and there's the possibility of the tower falling over, how does that impact the rest of the game when you have to like reset? Because when you reset, things become easier again. Yes.
Exactly.
So how does that impact the gameplay?
Well, depends on how you want to do it, but there's a number of ways to approach this. The one of the ways that I've seen people do is when the game has to be reset, the person who made it tumble ultimately is taken out of the game. But
that's the core mechanic.
You give them the option of removing X number of blocks in advance.
Right.
And just doing pop, pop, pop and set them up so that once the game picks back up, there's still that high level of tension.
Oh,
and
okay.
Also, one note, it is possible, Brandon is baiting the Blaze of Glory here, that in the game of Dread, when you can choose to tumble the tower without pulling a block.
You can just fucking knock it over.
When you do that, yeah, when you do that, you get to say how you go out kind of thing.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool. Okay. So you can choose to just, like, if you need to leave the game for whatever reason, like if it's a convention game or if you're tired and you're drunk and everyone else is having a good time.
Because it's 4 a.m. and you have a 9 a.m. game.
Oh, God. Yep. You could knock that tower over, but that gives you the privilege of saying how you die.
Con of the North, nice. You're my home con. Yeah. I love you to this day.
That's cool. Oh, man, I miss conventions so hard right now.
I know.
You're not too. The only one, Poppy.
I know.
Okay, Jenga is pretty esoteric. But Jacob, have you ever seen a game use dominoes?
The only game I've ever seen use dominoes is the game that I've been working on and off for the last 4 years. It's currently called Fates of the Stars. It's based on the Mexican Revolution, and it involves dominoes. I've realized in the time I've gone along that it's actually better suited to being a generic role-playing system. And I fell in love with dominoes in a previous job I had. And dominoes were not part of my growing up experience, unlike several other people's on this podcast. But especially Dr. Gerrymander, who I know dominoes
chicken
is practically...
Foot.
A dominoes is practically a trigger word for
it. Don't talk about chicken foot. No. No.
So, Xander, oh God, do you know the name?
My desire to get my grandmother on the podcast to play chicken foot or scat with us really went up. Like
hard fucking pass.
Hey, doctor.
That
do means you know
the more you complain, the more it's going to happen.
Do you know what the train game is, Xander?
No.
Mexican
do I want to?
Dominoes?
No. Not anymore.
Okay, I gotta call this because we're running late on time.
Okay,
so
I know. We've been talking for a long time.
Long story short, dominoes. A standard set of dominoes runs a split side is a tile with two split sides. One goes 0 to 6, one goes 0 to 6. That is the same as a D6 mechanic. One of the things we've been touching on with all of these objects of the table, whether they be dice, whether they be Jenga towers, whether they be cards, whether they be bennies, is the fact that it's a physical object that players get to and GMs get to manipulate in order to enhance the feeling of anticipation, anxiety, and put something in their hands other than the random chance of fate. Dominoes are inherently a 2d6 mechanic, and it's one I've been playing with for a while to figure out how to make a game system that best capitalizes on that.
That's and a really cool idea.
My goal, especially now that COVID's a thing and I actually spend more time at home, is to get that project done by the end of the year and get it test played with the members of the Bikers Dice and Bars community.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm down. I want to see more dominoes in games. I've never seen it before. And my first time I learned how to play dominoes, I was like, I really loved playing it. And my being a fucking hardcore role player at the time, I was like, I have to find a way to involve this in a game. But then I forgot about it.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, I've done statistical modeling on dominoes. Yeah. I'm working on it.
When we eventually go to Illinois and you get to actually meet my grandmother, like we will play some games.
Fuck yeah.
And it will down. Be great.
Let's kind of bring this to a wrap. On the subject of tools, we could talk much longer, apparently. I do want to close out with a little bit of discussion about keeping it relevant to the times because of COVID, because of quarantine, because everyone is now forced to play their games online. Many of these mechanics that we have discussed are available in online format. I don't know of an online Jenga Tower. Jacob might. If he does, you need to give me a link because I need it.
No, but I can say that Roll20, which is where I've been hosting many of my games, dice are a definite issue. You can definitely get dice taken care of. They incorporate card decks. Apparently, I am not certain about this, but tarot cards are an option for Roll20, and I've been working on and off for about a decade or a tarot card system. So.
And there are so many cool tarot card decks.
There really are.
Yeah.
So many.
I want to talk a little bit about the various implementations online. We're not going to dive into which tabletops there are because that, again, separate discussion. But there are a number of online ways to play role-playing games. Every single one of them has dice rolling mechanics. We play with dice on Discord. We play with dice on Roll20. I regularly run on Astral Tabletop. It's got a really cool dice mechanics. Dice are fucking everywhere. Dice are the first thing that any mechanics that any tabletop has to implement if they want people to play the fucking games.
Tabletop simulator.
Cards.
All kinds of shit.
Cards are rare.
Roll20
has cards, but they're basic. They don't have the level of implementation that I need to run a game with that level of interaction as Moda Bushido or my current one in testing Gatai Bushido, which is the Power Rangers / Voltron-esque version of it. Tabletop Simulator, however, might be the key to that. And
that's
the
gonna bit involve that I've used a lot
Tabletop of Simulator
input.
Is fucking rad. It costs money. Everyone has to buy software.
More.
Yep.
But it's a cool tool, and you can play fucking any game in Tabletop Simulator.
Dr. Xander, do you happen to have a Tabletop Simulator account via Steam?
I mean, I do have the Steams.
I have two extra licenses for Tabletop Simulator.
So I got one. I know Poppy's got one. I know NPC's got one. Let's hook the good doctor up.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to happen.
Doctor, we're going to hook you up with some Tabletop Simulator.
I want to close out the discussion of gaming tools with some final shouts to things that I want to see in games one day.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see someone take a lunch money deck and turn it into a combat system for a role-playing game.
Yeah, lunch money. NPC, you turned me on to that game, and I own it, and it's choice.
I want to see a person put together a Jax set as a difficulty mechanic in a role-playing game.
I want to see Hanafuda cards turned into a role-playing game mechanic.
I want to see somebody use fucking Pogs.
No.
Yes.
Challenge fucking accepted. You know, you give me the Pog set.
When I was a fucking kid and we were playing Pogs, you know what was my, like, the one you, the, what, whatever the fuck it was called, the one you threw? I used to fucking silver
the slammer.
Dollar, motherfucker. The my slammer, was yeah, the slammer. Silver dollar, because fuck you, that's why. Pogs.
I did have a game in development that used a Trivial Pursuit cheese wheel as a game mechanic.
Oh.
Maybe one day I'll bring that game around. But, yeah, let's go ahead and close this out and get to the wrap.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol, get going. Drink up, drink up, drink up, then order again.
So I have a good story for you. I forgot my original story. I'm going to tell you a new story that I just remembered right now. The first roommate I had when I moved to Portland was this Frenchman named Ludo. And
smell
Ludo sad.
Ludo scared.
No.
I'm sorry. I'm a horrible
C'est Ludo, c'est très triste. Anyways.
This cat is so angry. So,
there was one time... NPC used to live in this place with me. It was that place, NPC.
Villa Gorilla,
yeah. The old condo. And this, everything to Ludo was like, big, fat, American, whatever. Insert, you know, noun there.
I love and that one you time, added a Russian accent to a Frenchman.
Yeah, whatever. I don't give a fuck. And so... this fucking giant socialist cat,
anyways, whatever.
This giant cat jumped down onto the patio and he's like, big fat cat, big fat American cat. It was the funniest Cuccio. Damn thing to me. Oh man, I miss Ludo. He was a good guy.
I don't know of anything else that we have to talk about here. Any last words, any other news to share?
We are still in the depths of COVID. Reach out to all the businesses that you would otherwise frequent. CycleToon, Chris over at CycleToon, Guardian Games, any other business that you ordinarily frequent, and see...
Mom and Pop Wine Shop.
Mom and Pop Wine Shop. Thank you, Poppy.
I went to the Kennedy School and I bought rum the other day. It was great.
See if they are still in business. And see if you can support them through this. I happen to know that several of the game shops, Rainy Day Games, give a call to Rainy Day Games. Jason Bostick might take your call and he will fulfill your order for a new or used game. Call Chris.
And they'll bring it out to you at your car at the curb.
Absolutely. Call Chris over at CycleToon. And drop your bike off to get serviced without ever dealing with a human being other than a wave hello and goodbye.
Our friend Joe of Ramblin' Leather Goods is selling.
Oh yeah, I'm actually in contact with him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in contact with him to make me a custom leather gun holster.
Lovely.
Currently.
Nice. Nice.
Currently, CDC guidelines say that 4 days, which is the same time it would take for him to ship you anything, renders COVID neutral.
Nice.
Xander, your story had to do with gun. Something new about a gun?
Jesus. No Nixon, no.
You joined a gun group.
Oh, Xander, yes. That's what it was. Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
That's
I just joined the Discord channel, the Latino Rifle Club. Being a Mexican American and a strong Second Amendment advocate, and these folks are there to go and remind the Latino community of this country that yes, you do have Second Amendment rights, and you are not alone. And yep. The main poster of this group who's been posting a lot on Reddit. They have a Reddit channel, I guess, as well. I'm not as familiar with Reddit, so but
give me a call. I'll sit ship.
Yeah. So, but they did go, and they mentioned that when we have posted ads on Reddit, someone has asked, "Why on earth are you advocating for this?" And his response was, "Because a couple months ago, someone in El Paso went and murdered 23 of us."
Exactly.
And said, "Because you don't belong in our country." But you know what?
Fuck you. Over half of this country was Latino or Native American.
God damn
you belong in this country. And God damn it, we shoot back.
And what the book on the Statue of Liberty say?
Give us your poor and huddled masses.
Mm-hmm.
And so on that note,
speaking of poor
to my Latino masses and Latina brethren out there, pick up arms and, you know, fuck it. Fight back.
Thanks for listening. This has been Bikers, Dice, and Bars here in Portland, Oregon. You can find us online on Facebook, on Discord. There is a Discord channel shown all the way over there here in our Twitch stream.
Yeah, it's over here.
Also on Twitch.
Yeah. That way.
The... we're on
Twitch does it that way. Discord does it that way.
yeah. Patreon, if you want to kick us a few bucks, please. We appreciate it.
It helps pay the merciless server costs.
And if you missed the stream for the video, it's being saved and put on Patreon because Twitch only keeps things for a week.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Watch us there. And enjoy the revelry of how beautiful we look.
And especially this Poppy this here. One down
enjoy
there.
Enjoy that I am now
and but, this one.
Look at that. Right,
but specifically, you got to look and see that creepy motherfucking owl that's one eye peeking over Poppy's shoulder.
You mean the wizard owl that belongs on the back of a van?
Yes, I need that on a van. Anyway, I'm NPC.
I'm just Jacob.
I am the good doctor, Xander Gerrymander.
And I'm
best doctor, Jen.
I'm Poppy Boob Gelee.
And once again, Jacob.
Keep it shiny side up, brothers and sisters.
Make sure to always tip your bartenders, especially when we get back to work. Please, please, please.
Always roll the criticals, especially on this die. Don't get the right foot. That's the worst place to get a critical hit.
And please, from the bottom of my heart, please always drink responsibly.
Especially in these trying times.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining us, friend. We've reached the end of Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your car. But Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Yep.